Hey, everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's show because we are continuing our years-long marathon through the James Bond franchise, which means I am joined for this very special discussion of The World Is Not Enough by Mike Pomero. Hi, Mike.
Hey, everybody.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
Are you excited to talk Bond?
I am.
I sort of am. I was more excited before we started. Before I rewatched The World Is Not Enough.
Oh, interesting.
But we'll see.
Okay.
Real quick, the timing on this is pretty funny because I just want to quickly thank, is it Keith Love, who's at Keith Love's Art on Twitter, who just within the last few days of us recording this, not knowing that we had a Bond show already scheduled for this week, animated some of our nonsense when we talk about Bond. And it's up on YouTube, but go to at Keith Loves Art, and I'm sure you can find his animation. But it was very funny.
Very funny.
Yeah, and reminded me of just how little we actually talk about James Bond movies when we do these shows. People seem to like them, and by people, I mean like two people. One of whom is Adam Thaws, who's like one of our best friends, so I don't know if he counts. But
And Risky likes to listen to it. He says like before bed, I think, right?
Specifically the Bond
Yeah,
shows.
I think, yeah.
Do we need to like goodnight sweetheart him?
we might. That's
Three I'm men in. And a Risky. let's call up who's going to play Ghost Boy behind the curtain, I guess. I don't know.
You said Thaws earlier.
You guys can't see me, right? I can't do it.
Hello? You guys really can't see me?
I'm a boy who died on set. Anyway, we're going to talk The World Is Not Enough quickly. I want to mention F This Movie Fest. We talked about it on last week's show, but now the announcement has officially been made. On March 9th, beginning at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, we will be watching six movies from 1986. Go to fthismovie.com for all the details. We're going to be tweeting through them. It's our annual F This Movie Fest. We've been doing it for like 7 years now,
That's
I think.
That's crazy to me.
I know. This is number 8, maybe?
That's great.
I don't know for sure, but I gave up numbering them, and now I'm just putting the year, which is fine. But couldn't make some very tough decisions, so decided not to make tough decisions and just threw an extra movie in there. And if it's too much, you can always sit one out. You know, do as much as you can.
I have a question.
I might have
the movies that are shown.
Yes.
I've seen them all, but Labyrinth.
You've never seen Labyrinth?
I've never seen Labyrinth.
What? Okay.
Is it kid friendly?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. For sure. I mean, except for at one point, Bowie does fuck Jennifer Connelly.
Like, oh.
But he has a puppet dick, so I guess it's kid friendly.
Oh, please.
The dick talks, and it has the voice of David Bowie.
They've been watching Puppet Dick for
He calls it Ziggy years. Stardust. And or is that what he? Never mind. It's gonna get so gross. Thank you for finishing that thought in your head, you pervert. God, you're gross. No, I'm just kidding. Mike, have you seen anything good lately?
Oh yeah, sure. Let's see. I had a Larry Cohen double feature.
Nice.
It's Alive and This Stuff.
Okay. New to both. New to neither.
So I thought I had seen them both. I had definitely seen It's Alive. It's been a long time, but I always thought I saw. I thought I had seen The Stuff. Have you ever had that where you think, yeah, I've seen this movie, and then you watch it and you're like, oh, maybe I haven't?
I don't. I feel like I have the reverse way more often, which is like, I've never seen this, and then I put it on. Oh, I've totally seen this.
Sure. It hasn't happened often, but it happened in this case. So that was new to me. And that is like, that's a strange movie. It's like half of a good movie.
Yeah.
Michael Moriarty's given a bizarre performance.
Always. always.
But very fun. Some of the effects are a blast.
Yeah. It's like the ideas are a little better than the execution.
Sure.
Not that they're particularly subtle ideas, but...
Right. But it's fun. Like, you know, Danny Aiello shows up briefly. And a nice cameo. Paul Sorvino is in it.
Yeah, I forgot that some of those people are in there. Yeah. I only think of Garrett Morris.
Sure.
Like, literally, day and night. I'm not talking about even the stuff. I'm talking about... I can't hear other actors' names because all I think of is Garrett Morris.
Of course.
Yeah.
So that was fun.
Okay.
I actually like It's Alive.
Yeah. It's funny because I grew up hearing about It's Alive from my dad, who would like they made this movie about a killer baby. Can you believe it? And I was like, no. And then you see it, and it's not the – I just hit the mic. It's not the killer baby you think it's going to be, or the killer baby movie you think it's going to be. It's, like, played totally straight.
Yeah.
And it's, like, an actual – good movie about being a parent and like what you would do for your
kids.
That's
the really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the parent stuff. I mean, there were a few moments I cracked up because the police, it took no time at all for them to be like, yeah, we have to kill this kid.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
wouldn't you?
Oh, sure. That stuff made me laugh. And it's like a 90 minute movie that probably could have been 75.
Have you seen King Coen?
No, in fact, that was my motivation for, because I want to, you know, we've talked about this before, like, is it better to see the movie about the filmmaker before seeing the movies or vice versa? So, I went vice versa, and I'm trying to watch a bunch of his movies before seeing King Coen.
Okay.
Do you like it?
Oh, yeah, no, I like it a lot. It's incredibly entertaining. Okay. And he's really
great. Very entertaining.
Yeah. And there was a bunch of stuff in there I didn't know about. Friendships that he had with like some older Hollywood types.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's really good.
Cool. I have the It's Alive box set, so
ooh.
I'm looking for. I have not seen the sequel. So
2 is interesting. I'm less a fan of 3, but
okay,
they're all whatever. You know, you can't go wrong really with Larry Cohen.
Sure. I have this thing when I come on here that I feel like I can't talk about anything that I haven't, that I saw more than a week ago.
Interesting.
I don't know where I get that. I feel like I can't talk
about. I usually can't, but that's just because I do this every week.
Well, right,
so
exactly.
I can pretty much only talk about this last week.
But in my head, I'm always on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And
you're Garrett Morris in my head, so kind of works out for both of us.
So, like, on my way here, I started panicking because Christy, my wife, and I have been watching this week, caught up on True Detective and watched a lot of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so I haven't gotten that many movies in.
Okay.
Like one of them being The Wizard of Oz.
Sure.
So I'm like, what can I say about it? Have you guys heard of The Wizard of Oz?
Overrated.
Have you guys heard of The Wizard of Oz?
Tornadoes don't do that. That's not how they work.
Right?
Thanks, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
took me right out of it. So let's see, what else have I watched? I was going to save that one for last because I have a feeling you watched it.
Ooh. I bet I did.
I saw The Kid Who Would Be King.
Yeah, how's that?
I was disappointed
in
it. I thought it was fine.
Okay.
It was a little too long.
How does it stack up against, let's say, A Kid in King Arthur's Court?
Well, what does stack up against
Good point.
A Kid in King Arthur's Court?
Good point.
I think I told you last time I was over here, I'm trying to see, so my New Year's resolution is to catch up. I have a lot of horror movie blind spots that I'm embarrassed about, and I want to like catch up on a bunch of them. So I've been trying to. Session 9.
Okay.
Which I liked a lot.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
Sure.
Yeah. I thought it was
very
good. I don't know.
I need to revisit it.
Okay.
Because I just was recently listening to the last part of a Pure Cinema episode that I hadn't. The last part of the John Carpenter part 2.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And that was the movie that Elric paired with The Ward and was just talking up that movie like crazy.
It's really good.
I clearly need to watch it again because I remember being like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But not in love with it, and I clearly need to watch it again. I think part of the problem was when I watched it, I was maybe distracted, and I think it's the kind of movie that like you should probably have the lights off and really pay attention to.
I would agree.
All right.
Speaking of Pure Cinema, it's killing me. I love their Scorsese podcast.
I mean, I listened to the first part. I'm barely into 4 hours of part 2, so I'm excited. I'm like only through King of Comedy, I think.
It's so good.
Yeah.
This makes me want, not that we need an excuse to rewatch his movies,
right.
But fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I could stop there. I was going to end on, I watched horror noir.
Yeah.
Which I assume you did as well.
I did.
I thought it was terrific.
I did too. I feel bad because I got greedy. I was almost like hoping for more talking heads because I feel like at the very beginning they flash all these people and I'm like, oh my gosh, they got so-and-so and so-and-so and then some of those people are barely in the movie and I got greedy and I was like wanting more
but the talking
more variety.
Heads,
the ones they have are great.
They're so good.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think I just was hoping for more variety amongst the people that they did get.
I get it.
But whatever. Yeah, really strong. Really
it is.
Good.
And they,
the clips are great.
Yeah. Clips are great. Like a lot of those movies, it just makes me want to go and seek out so many of them.
The stuff they talk about is super interesting. And
it's very interesting because I, you know, yeah, just, I, you know, I obviously they're going to come at it from a different angle than I will. And I saw, like, specifically, and spoilers for Get Out. Well, actually, I won't even say, but they, you know, they talk about why the ending that Jordan Peele chose to go with in Get Out, why that was important to them as African Americans.
Yes.
So interesting.
And, yes.
Yeah, movies filled with stuff like that. That was terrific.
Really, really good. Really good. I hope Shudder gets into making more original documentaries or, you know, whatever. I know they're putting up all of History of Horror, which is good because I didn't finish it.
It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I've seen it.
Well, but... right. But it's still fun. What drove me, excuse me, what drove me nuts about that, I may have said it on a podcast before, but Christy, again, my wife brought up how, like, that ran through November, I think, the Eli Roth.
Yeah.
She was so aggravated. She's like, why didn't this just air, like, over 5 nights in October or something? Because it just
not
makes...
at 11 o'clock at night?
Right.
It was almost like they wanted nothing to do with it. It was very strange.
It was bizarre. Because every episode would end, and she's like, well, they just showed 5 movies I would love to watch right now.
Right.
I wish they would have done that in October.
Yeah. Shudder makes more sense, I think. And maybe that was always the end game. I don't know.
Because
they just threw it away on AMC. So
all great talking heads in that.
Yeah, series. No. And not that anybody says anything super insightful.
No.
Because they're covering something that we've just seen so many times, whereas horror noir is covering something from a very different perspective.
Absolutely.
And those early films that they talked about were just not on my radar at all.
Absolutely.
Those two filmmakers, I can't remember their names, unfortunately, right now, but not on my radar at all.
Right. Oh, I'm not comparing them. I know. But
yeah,
the Eli Roth one is just like a greatest hits. But
right. But it's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah. I like clips.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Sure.
All right.
The Wizard of Oz. Everybody
saw the Lego Movie 2.
Oh, we're going next week. How is it?
You know.
Okay.
Whatever. I will. I'm a fan of the Lego Movie.
Me too.
I will admit that up until maybe the last 15 or 20 minutes, I mean, there's jokes here and there that are okay. There's a couple of really good songs. John LaJoie actually wrote the songs, which is cool.
It is.
But honestly, it wasn't until maybe the last 15 minutes when there was some very specific messaging that relates directly to my life about kids, brothers and sisters and stuff.
Okay.
And that stuff really started to work for me. The rest of the movie, I hate saying this because it's such a lazy critique. I found myself just kind of bored. And maybe it was just the mood I was in. I just was kind of checked out. I didn't think it was quite as clever, quite as funny. I know the novelty is gone, which probably hurts it a little bit. Because I remember laughing even at the animation in the first movie in those first few minutes when he's taking a shower and they're just dropping those one literally. I was like, that is so clever. That's amazing. I didn't have any of those moments, but that's because there's been 3 Lego movies already. I thought it was... about half as good as the original.
Did you see the other Lego movies, like Lego Batman?
I saw Lego Batman. I never saw Ninjago.
Okay.
Did you?
I did. I saw them both and had felt... I was the way you felt at the beginning of Lego Movie 2, just sort of being bored and checked out. That's how I felt with those two.
Yeah, this is at least, I would say, it's much more comparable to Lego Batman than it is to the Lego movie.
Okay.
So, oh well, my kids liked it, so...
That
counts for something, right? We watched Velvet Buzzsaw.
Oh, I want to watch that.
Oh, you should. That's so... Did you know...
That reaction's why I've slowed down.
Did you know that there's some people, I guess, in the art world that are a little bit pretentious and kind of cutthroat? I don't know what this movie is.
Okay.
Like, how disappointing, because I'm a big fan of Nightcrawler.
I love Nightcrawler.
I really like a lot of the people involved. Again, I'm happy that I said this to Erica as we were watching it. Like, I'm glad that Tony Gilroy is making movies just because it means Renee Russo is getting work.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have a very good part to play. Like, her part in Nightcrawler is so much better. But I'm happy to see her in stuff. So keep making movies, Tony Gilroy. Man, I don't know what this is. And I've been hearing other podcasts talk about it as people have been watching it. And a lot of what I've been hearing is positive. I've heard people say, like, well, you have to watch it as a black comedy. Okay, but I guess by that logic, it should be kind of funny. And it's not. And it's not, but it's also not really trying to play it straight as a horror movie, except for the times that it is. Is it satirizing the art world? Because what is it satirizing? Like, these people are kind of full of themselves. Ooh, you take it easy there with your hot takes. Yeah, I just, and Jake Gyllenhaal, who is an actor that I genuinely really like.
Me too.
But watching Velvet Buzzsaw and coming off of The Sisters Brothers and maybe one other movie, I was like, oh, Jake Gyllenhaal is a little bit of a Nicolas Cage in that his performances sometimes will skirt just this side of being terrible, where it's like, oh, there's such a fine line between bad and good in terms of what he's doing. And he has always stayed on the side of good, but like, he comes close in Velvet Buzzsaw. It's very, very close. Even the name means nothing. It was the name of Rene Russo's punk band in the 70s. But I'm going to spoil something. That factors into the plot not at all. The fact that she was in a punk band means nothing.
So the character is in a punk band.
Correct.
Oh, I thought. I wish for a second Rene, I thought oh Rene, God, I was
Rene
like,
Russo was
cow.
Really in a punk band, I would be buying every record right now. Yeah, no, didn't work for me.
That's too bad.
Didn't work for me.
I'll catch up to it, but
another one of those Netflix movies where, like, you're so excited that it's on Netflix, and then you watch it, and you're like, "Oh, that's why it's on Netflix."
Right?
I got it. I mean, it's not quite the Cloverfield paradox, but it's not so far off from the Cloverfield paradox. I watched Piercing.
Oh, okay.
Which was just the subject of the most recent episode of Shockwaves, a podcast that you and I both mm-hmm. love, and mm-hmm. the director, Nicholas Pesch, was on. And his last movie, The Eyes of My Mother, was a movie that I thought was very well made, but that I didn't really connect to. And Piercing is kind of similar.
Okay.
It's basically a two-person drama, Mia Wasikowska and Christopher Abbott. It's basically the two of them for the whole movie. Alone together in like a hotel room. And the part that got me excited was when they mentioned that all of the score is music, library music from giallo movies. Mm-hmm. And I was like, ooh, neat. So is he doing a modern giallo? Oh, not really. Okay. So why the music? Because it's cool. Okay. Like Deep Red comes on and I'm like, ooh, neat. I like this music. What does it have to do with what I'm watching? Not that much. Again, well made, well acted. Interesting, but I didn't connect with it.
Okay.
Which was disappointing. And then the last movie I will talk about is one that I would say is on both my list and Erica's list for one of our favorite discoveries of the year so far, and that is One Cut of the Dead.
Oh, you saw it.
Yes. So this was really the movie that played festivals and was a big deal and then showed up on Amazon Prime for like 2 days, and I'm told social media blew up because Erica told me everybody's talking about this movie. And I said, I don't know anything about it. And by the time we wanted to watch it, it had already been taken down. And there was a long article on, I think, Birth, Movies, Death about the whole thing and what had happened and why it was maybe bad that it had shown up. It was basically an illegal copy that was up on Amazon Prime. Right. So it was taken down pretty quickly. However, Diabolik DVD is selling a region-free Blu-ray of the film. You can just borrow ours if you want.
Oh, I would love to.
Because we already watched it.
Thank you.
I did not know what to expect, and I won't spoil anything here. I didn't even know what the movie was about. I knew it was a zombie movie, and it is, kind of. But it's terrific.
Okay.
That's all I'll say.
Oh,
it's super, it's really, really fun and really, really good. And 30 minutes into the movie, I had to ask myself, like, what is going to happen from this point forward, because I had no idea, and it wasn't what I was expecting it to be, but it was actually what it ended up being was something I liked way more than what I thought it was going to turn out to be.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I know very little about it as well. But is it a horror comedy?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not like gory or anything. So, but yeah, very much worth seeing, guys, if you can track down a copy of it. I know a lot of people saw it out of a festival and loved it, but there is that. I don't know that it has any U.S. distribution right now.
I don't know.
But there is that region-free Blu-ray for sale on Diabolik DVD.
Oh, that's awesome.
They're not paying us to advertise on their show, but go to their site and order from them. They're very nice people.
Very nice.
That's it for me.
Okay.
The world is not enough. Here it is. How did we land on this one as our next Bond?
I don't know.
Okay.
These episodes are always such a blur. We only do one a year. We landed on it, I believe, at the end of our last Bond episode, but
sense.
I don't remember.
What was our last Bond episode, I guess, would be my question.
Dr. No.
Was it really?
Maybe.
Was that in 2016? I have no idea. I think it was Dr. No. I don't remember talking about Dr. No. I don't remember what we said about Dr. No. I don't even remember seeing Dr. No, I'll be honest.
That sounds about right.
I remember Sean Connery singing Underneath the Mango Tree. That's what I remember. And then telling Ursula Andress, "You're the man now, dog," which I thought was a weird move.
I love that's two consecutive podcasts that line has come up.
Did it come up on the last one? What was the...
With Erica?
Oh, when she mentioned Finding Forrester.
Yeah.
Well, so it was much more organic that one than it
right.
was on this one. So this holds the distinction of being the last Bond movie of the 20th century.
Okay. Yeah.
Of being the highest grossing Bond movie at the time of its release. It was the highest ever grossing Bond movie until Die Another Day, the next Bond movie, which I believe then held the title probably until Casino Royale. Skyfall is still the champion,
I think,
right?
So, yeah.
Because that movie made crazy money because it's good.
I got real nervous when you said this movie holds a distinction. I seriously thought you were going to say this movie holds a distinction of you claiming it's the best Bond movie.
Of you claiming it?
Yes, because you seem
said that.
No, I have not. No. But every
You're
once
saying,
in a while.
Like, is this the Friday the 13th part 7
yes.
of Bond movies?
Yeah. So I legitimately got nervous for a second. Like, what did I say?
So Pierce Brosnan, another piece of trivia, only Bond to run the entire decade. And that's because they didn't start until halfway.
Yeah.
But every other decade has had at least two Bonds. The 90s
I
only had Pierce
that.
Brosnan. But again, he didn't start till 95 because there was such a long gap between License to Kill. And we're almost there now with Daniel Craig, right? 2010 through 2020 is just going to be Daniel Craig. Unless he's recast and they get it out this year. I don't think that's happening, right? Do we know what's happening with the new Bond?
Cary Fukunaga is going to direct it.
That's happening
until
he quits?
Right. I don't know if they've actually begun production.
Okay.
But...
Is it Daniel Craig?
Yeah.
It is.
This is the last one, I believe, on his contract. So it seems like it's a foregone conclusion that this is it for him.
So you think they'll kill him? They're going to say kill Bond? before I rewatch, so let me say this: the first hour of this is my favorite Brosnan Bond movie.
Okay.
And then as I was watching it, I was like, maybe this is my favorite Brosnan Bond movie, but I don't like the back half nearly as much as the front half.
Yeah, I have theory.
Well, let's hear it.
Is that
we're talking about the movie?
Oh, we are.
No,
oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, we don't have a character for Pierce Brosnan.
No, and I
watching
thought of that while
video
we were watching
on YouTube,
it.
I was like, oh, we have like a voice, not just a voice, but like a character.
Right.
I was trying to explain it to Erica. I was like, Roger Moore's a perv. Sean Connery's an asshole. Timothy Dalton is a sweetheart. And Lazenby's an idiot. Like, and those are the personalities we've given these guys. I guess we don't have one for Daniel Craig either, although.
No.
Whatever.
But
yeah, Pierce Brosnan doesn't have one.
No.
Because we've only done GoldenEye.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. I don't remember what I was... Well, we're
Your theory about why the first half is better than the second half.
Is it because Denise Richards shows up like 58 minutes into the movie?
I do not think that at all.
Okay. So it's not because of...
I'm going to go on record and say that Denise Richards is not the problem with this movie.
She's not the only problem.
You think she's a problem with this movie?
I do.
Okay.
And I felt bad about that because going into it, because she's considered, I think, one of the worst Bond girls. So going into it, I was like, well, fuck that, because in my head or my memory or in my memory is that people are saying, you know, she's too hot or too beautiful to be a scientist or whatever. I'm like, fuck that. This is, I don't think that's the problem. I think she, I don't know. I feel bad. I just don't think she's very good. I don't think she's given anything to do other than.
Yeah, I don't. Really, I don't know that it's her fault. I don't think Christmas Jones is a great character.
No, she's not. Again, not given a whole lot to do other than really be a damsel in distress.
But is that different from any other of that Bond girl? Is she any different than Tanya Roberts in A View to a Kill?
No, but I think,
or Jane Seymour in whatever fucking movie she's in.
Not necessarily, but I do think she is not good. Like I found her distractingly awful.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I feel bad saying that, because I really went into it like ready to fucking be her champion.
I don't think she's much worse than anyone else in the movie. I don't. Yeah. I think a lot of the hate towards her is like, no scientist can give me a boner. So
sure.
Which, she gives me a boner.
Which,
and
is
again,
bullshit.
They costume her in a ridiculous way.
She looks like Lara Croft.
She's Tomb Raider. Right. Exactly. Like, she pulls off her scientist coveralls and she's Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And it is ridiculous. But again, Denise Richards is not to blame. She didn't ask to be named Christmas Jones. Let me ask you this. Did they name her Christmas Jones just for that last
line? I think 100%.
Okay.
I mean, I don't
anytime
know.
Anytime
but
somebody says Christmas.
Yes.
And I was so wishing that Roger Moore had a Christmas Jones. Like, Pierce Brosnan barely makes use of it. He
sure
saves it for the very end.
Right.
And he has more Roger Moore in him than I wish.
Can we get into this?
Yeah.
So, there's
no structure.
So, watching...
ever.
watching the movie this time, it dawned on me, I think he's done... Pierce Brosnan's done such a disservice by having him be this modern day Roger Moore with these stupid fucking one-liners. I think when he's not doing it, I don't think he's a bad Bond. I think he's I don't know. He could be a little dark. He gives great fucking face. He gives great gun pointing face. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the best gun pointer of any Bond. I stand by that. He looks terrific. And I think he's fine until we have this like need for him to toss off these lines that I think Roger Moore, like those Bonds, and Roger Moore had it as a bit of a crutch, because what the fuck else is Roger Moore going to do? He can't punch again. You know what I mean? So like, that was his Bond.
The guy can barely move right without shitting his pants.
Right, right. So like, that was his Bond, where right. I feel like it does Pierce a big disservice. I at the time when I saw those movies, I didn't find it distracting the way I do now.
The one-liners?
Yeah.
Do you think it has anything to do with like having lived through the Daniel Craig years and now you've seen the Bond without the one-liners?
It might.
Every once in a while they give him one and it sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's weird. He is firmly trapped between like, I mean, in some ways he's a good bridge to Daniel Craig, but also Timothy Dalton, like... Because, again, when you strip away the one-liners, what you have is Daniel Craig and Timothy Dalton, basically, when you have just kind of the physical Bond. I like that Pierce Brosnan is kind of physical.
He can be, yeah.
I mean, there are shots in this movie. There's a lot of obvious stunt doubling, but then there's a lot of shots where it's like, oh, I can tell that that's him.
Mm-hmm.
Even when he's swinging away from the explosion, like, they make sure to get his face and the explosion in the same shot.
Right.
Or skiing. I was like, look, you can tell that Pierce Brosnan, and not in the wide shots where they're going really fast, but like every once in a while you could tell Pierce Brosnan is actually skiing. And you think back to like the opening of The Spy Who Loved Me with Roger Moore in front of a green screen, right, or whatever, you know, rear projection, I guess, at that time. And I, you know, we've come a long way. But yeah, the one-liners are rough. And the, I guess back to Denise Richards, like, I don't know. Who's the good version of that Bond girl? If Electra King is bad Bond girl, right? So we have good Bond girl. I mean, to me, Denise Richards is in that same tradition of Tanya Roberts and Alexandra Paul. Is that her name? From License to Kill?
I don't
know. No, that's
him.
Not Alexander Paul. Who the fuck is that? Who's like the good Bond girl? Who are the ones that you would hold up and say, like, hey, Denise Richards, why couldn't you have been more like this?
Well, I
Vesper Lynn doesn't count because she's kind of
yes,
both.
Right. No, I don't disagree with you that her character is in line with most
Carrie
other
Lowell. I'm sorry, not Alexander Paul, but
you're forgiven.
thank you.
That her character's in line with most other good Bond girls.
Right.
I agree. I don't, she just seems so out of place. Again, like, I don't want this. I promise you, I'm not saying because she can't look like that and be a scientist. That's not what I'm saying. She just, I don't know. She seems like she's in over her head. She doesn't
there are
belong
times where
in
she doesn't
movie.
Know how to move. We talked about this with Amber Heard and Aquaman.
Okay,
where,
yeah.
Like, Amber Heard doesn't seem to know how to move uh-huh. in this world. And there are times where Denise Richards seems not sure how to physically move around in a way that is convincing or natural
right.
or whatever. I don't know. Beyond that, I just, in no way am I accusing you of this, but I feel like this movie automatically gets dismissed. Because, well, this is the one where Denise Richards plays a scientist, and therefore it sucks.
And that's why I was, like, real nervous about, not nervous, well, just hesitant to be critical. Like, I didn't want to be critical of her because I didn't want, I'm not on that bandwagon. I think, and yeah, she's not given any favors. Because half the words that come out of her mouth are, just, again, those were written for her.
Right.
And it's ridiculous. She's not giving any favor. She just seems out of place.
She was saying lines about, like, detonating stuff, and it's real expository stuff. And I was listening to it, and I was like, okay, not super convincing. But who's the actor who's, like, selling that?
No,
I don't know. And this idea that, like, oh, yeah, she's real convincing as a scientist. Like, is Sophie Marceau that much more convincing as a supervillain? Like, why can we accept one but not the other? I don't know. Again, people not liking Denise Richards, I get it. It's fine. I'm not saying anybody's wrong to dislike her. But it's just one of those, like, real shorthandy things now where you don't even have to think about it. You just – the accepted wisdom is, well, this movie's bad because she's bad because she's not convincing as a scientist.
Okay. Yep.
Again, none of that is directed at you.
And I don't think this movie's bad, to be honest.
I don't either.
I actually like most of it.
I do too. I don't like the second half as much. I think there's some interesting stuff with, like, the dynamic between Robert Carlyle and Sophie Marceau.
Me too.
I almost wish
I like them both.
They had pursued that a little bit mm-hmm. further in terms of their history together. I think he's a pretty interesting villain. He's always good, but
right.
like in terms of a different sort of Bond villain, I think he's kind of interesting.
He is. He's this nice mix of being, he's interesting. His character's legitimately interesting while also having that ridiculous Bond. I have a bullet through my brain, but it's a mix that works. I liked it. This Bond, this movie, I think for the most part achieves this nice marriage of campy Q giving him ridiculous gadget Bond things.
Yeah.
And a little more for that world, a little more grounded stuff as well.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that, like, the big action climax is just Robert Carlyle getting, like, speared.
Mm-hmm.
There's no music playing. It's, like, kind of quiet, pretty low key, and that's the big finale, mm-hmm. right? I mean, so it does some different stuff. I mean, they picked Michael Apted to direct because of his ability to get performances out of women, which I think is interesting because is this Bond that much more female focused? I get that, like, Elektra King is a big villain, but
she is. I mean, Elektra in M and
M
Christmas.
Is, well, a, M is Judi Dench. Like, you don't need to hire Michael Apted to coach Judi Dench.
I understand.
And all they're doing is sticking her in a jail.
I agree.
And giving her, like, a broom handle. Like,
I'm just
Pirates of the Caribbean shit. Trying to convince the dog to come over with the keys. Like, what the hell is that?
That's
a good scene right there.
I'm just saying, I'm just listing the women, like,
Is that what we're doing?
Well, you said he was brought on to direct
Dr. Underpants. By the way, do you know that doctor's name? Serena Scott Thomas, is it? The doctor who like clears him after his injury. Dr. Warm Flash. Like, what are we
doing?
Are
you serious?
I swear to fucking God. Like, what is that?
I don't even...
Are we just saying, like, she's premenopausal? Is that what we're getting at? Like, she's a little bit older?
Dr. Warm Flash.
I swear that... It just reminds me sometimes that I hate James Bond. Like, I love James Bond movies. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, wait, no, I hate James Bond. Because what are we talking about? Dr. Warm Flash? Dr. Molly Warm Flash. Serena Scott Thomas. What the fuck?
Yep, there it is.
What are we doing? Oh. What are we doing? Dr. Warm Flash, quick.
Oh, I did not know that.
Fuck her while she still has viable embryos. I don't know. Like, what are we? What? What? Anyway, did you read who else was in the running?
No. To direct? You have all the trivia.
One was Joe Dante.
Really?
Which, I mean, I feel gypped that we never saw a, because you know that Robbie the Robot would have been the villain.
Just like, Dick Miller would be the new
Dick
Q.
Dick Miller would have been Q. R.I.P. Dick Miller.
R.I.P.
Yes. Belinda Bulaski would have played Moneypenny. William Shalit could have been the John Cleese part. It would have been amazing. Oh. Henry Gibson would have been Judy Dench. Damn it.
It writes itself.
It's a real missed opportunity here.
That's amazing. I didn't know.
Right?
That.
I mean, again, I don't know what Joe Dante was doing in the late 90s. I mean, I guess Small Soldiers somehow made them think he could do these big action movies, because he's never done a movie of Bond size before.
I think it's interesting that they would have broken their streak by hiring an American, and that Joe Dante would be the American to do it. Oh,
the other name was Peter Jackson.
Oh.
Yeah. Which obviously didn't happen either. But
they're both very interesting.
And they went with Michael Apted, which is fine, because, again, I think he does a pretty good job.
I think it's really well directed.
I thought it was weird that it starts with Bond as a 7-year-old. And then every 7 years,
I was trying to figure out how to work that
back in on Bond. But you know, it was different.
I've got 7 up, if you know what I mean. Lazenby.
I've got 7 up in my pants. Seriously, I spilled 7 up on my dick. Would someone help me clean it? I can't be trusted with fizzy liquids. Lazenby. God damn it. Constantly spilling on himself. Just, he's like a child that has to be watched at every second.
Oh, can't wait till that gets animated.
I spilled 7 up on my pants and I tried to clean it with seltzer water. God damn it, Lazenby. That's not how that works. Pouring seltzer onto 7-Up. Anyway. Other people who auditioned apparently for the Denise Richards role include Tiffany Amber Thiessen was considered.
Okay.
And Jerry Halliwell.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, did they go the right direction? I don't know. It's... whatever. Nobody was going to do a great job with Christmas Jones, unfortunately. But again, at least it was. In some ways, I wish it had been Roger Moore. Just not that I want Christmas Jones to have to undergo constant sexual harassment. But like, you know, she would have at the hands of Roger Moore.
Absolutely.
Say, would you mind tickling my jingle balls?
Oh, I was while we were watching, I was trying to come up with some Christmas jokes. I don't think I can be Jingle Ball.
Can I put my candy cane up your chimney? I say. I don't know. Candy cane and chimney don't even make... those aren't two things. I mean, they're both Christmas
they're both
related,
Christmas, right.
But like, that doesn't make sense.
He got lazy toward the end.
I really like the cold open. I think it's a really good cold open in terms of like we get the stuff of him rescuing the money, and it's like a decent sequence where he's jumping out the window and he's tied to the guy, and you kind of think that's it. But no, actually, because then the money explodes, and then we get this insane chase sequence on water and then on land, and you're like, okay, that, oh, wait, they're getting into a hot air balloon? Okay, this thing's just going to keep going. Reminded me a little bit of the opening of like Temple of Doom, where it just keeps going and going and going, and it kind of ends at the hot air balloon because she blows up. But yeah, I thought it was a really good cold open, and it was like, again, making me think, oh, this could this be the best Bond of the Brosnan years? I might place it second
behind GoldenEye.
I think GoldenEye might still be the best one. I would probably have to rewatch GoldenEye, which I know we just did a few years ago, but
who can remember that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember disliking any of the Brosnans except Die Another Day.
Same here.
Which is still the worst? Is Spectre worse? I feel like we've probably asked this question on the last Bondcast.
I would have to watch. I would. And why would I want to do this? But I feel like I'd have to watch them back to back.
Yeah.
But I feel like at least Spectre, off the top of my head, you know, I could point to, well, one, just Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
I enjoy. Batista.
Yeah.
I actually dig.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That
opening
scene.
Shot is cool,
yeah.
Right? Until it isn't. Until it's like obviously CGI helicopter nonsense.
Sure, right.
But yeah, the opening
right.
is cool.
Exactly. So there's some things I could point to. We'll Die Another Day. It's been a while since I've seen it. But I can't think of anything that
I can't either.
That I dug.
Nothing comes to mind.
What? And normally, I think we save this to the end. But
yeah.
You made me think of it. What did you think of the theme song?
I like the theme song.
Right?
Yeah.
It's one of those that, like, I don't think about it ever until, but when I'm listening to it, I think it's fine.
It feels like a Bond song.
It does feel like a Bond song.
It's unfortunate that it's from a band that, like, if you weren't alive in the mid to late 90s, you have no frame of reference. Oh, it's by this band Garbage. Who? Come on, Shirley Manson? Butch Vig's band?
Yeah.
You know, producer Butch Vig. What? What are you? You're saying words. But I can't understand you. So that part's a bummer, but I think the song works.
I agree.
I like it. Apparently, Collider, maybe, named it the second best Bond song ever.
Wow.
Which I thought was a little high.
Behind
Goldfinger.
Yeah, okay.
Which, like, where's You Only Live Twice? Come on.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's the best one ever.
Yeah.
What is your favorite? I'm sure we've asked this on every Bond show, too, because we do these so far apart that we don't remember our answers. And by now, our answers are different, right? So every time we revisit these subjects, it's like, I don't know, my answers are totally different.
I'm not saying it's the best.
Okay. Oh, no.
I'm predictable. Where do you think I would go?
I'm going to say you're going to say You Know My Name.
Yeah, I feel like You Know My Name.
God damn it.
Is my, yeah.
That's bonkers.
It's
I mean, listen,
bonkers.
Rest in peace, Chris Cornell. I know you love that movie. I know Daniel Craig is your boy. Best Bond theme ever? You Know My Name?
Favorite Bond
Oh, that's
theme.
True. Yeah. No, okay. You're right. I did not make that distinction. You're right. Favorite, I get it.
Okay.
I can't argue with it now. Damn it. you took my power away. Favorite, I get it. I apologize. I don't know.
What's yours?
Mine is You Only Live Twice.
Yeah. Okay.
I literally just said it.
Yeah, you did. Who can remember?
I hung some mistletoe from my pants. Why do your pants smell like lemon lime? Never mind. Never mind. So I think it's the point. And again, I don't think it's Denise Richards' fault. I like the scene where he meets her and they go down into the mine and they escape out of the thing. Like, I'm fine with all that. I feel like that is, unfortunately, after that scene is where things start to go downhill.
Okay.
I feel like the movie just becomes a little bit more generic, or like, I don't know, like the 90s were not a great time for this kind of action movie. I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a little too big and a little too slick. Like, what's great about 90s action is early 90s when you had, like, that's the heyday of Van Damme and Seagal. And,
sure.
And that stuff's great, but that's a lot smaller. I can't think of many, like, big action movies from the 90s, like Speed would be one that I think is great.
Yeah.
I can't think of many great big action movies from the 90s that I think are really, really terrific. I think there's just a weird, I don't want to say anonymity to it, but it feels like a movie made by Second Unit.
Okay. That makes sense.
And the back half of this movie feels like a lot of fucking Second Unit, you know? And I know that's true of every Bond. But we've talked about this so many times. The ones we really like tend to be a little bit smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Skyfall from Russia with Love, like, tends to be a little bit more personal, and a little bit maybe more about the Bond character, because I don't really think there's anything about the Bond character in this movie that... I don't think we move the bar forward at all.
No, not at all.
In terms of him as a character. And maybe we're not supposed to. I don't know. I feel like even GoldenEye does a little bit, though, in terms of his history with Alec, whatever, Sean Bean.
The closest
Ned Stark. I'm sorry.
Your Grace. he wasn't Your Grace. The closest you get in this movie is
Roger Moore is trying to give Lady Stark a little head. Just Roger Moore moving in on Lady Stark.
Please don't ruin Game of Thrones for me. I mean, you've come so
Roger
close.
Moore? Yes. Come on.
Oh, God, because now I just want to make jokes and I don't want to... The closest we come in this movie is
God. You know what I say, Cersei? Keep it in the family.
Oh,
all Roger Moore's Game of Thrones pickup lines. Anyway.
Sophie Marceau maybe asks him if he's ever lost anyone.
Okay, yeah.
And he just doesn't answer.
Okay.
That is the closest. My point is, like, I think that's the closest we get. Like, okay. His non-answer is an answer, but that's the closest we get to
him shooting her is pretty cold.
It's super cold. And, yeah. Like, I thought it was...
Although she does draw on him, right? He doesn't straight up shoot her.
Well, because... Right. But I thought it was the shot afterwards is super interesting because, like, she's dead on the bed.
Yeah.
And he leans over her in such a, like, menacing, just like a fucking monster sort of way.
When he says, I never miss?
Yeah. Is that when he says it? Oh, yeah. It's just.
But he says it in his charming Irish lilt.
He does.
I never miss. Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta. The name's Bond. James Bond.
I thought it was a dark moment, and I thought that shot, like, just put an exclamation point on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because really, he's, like, menacing over her. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember him leaning over her.
Yeah, he, like, she's dead on the bed, and he like, gets him between her legs and just sort of...
Whoa. Take it easy, Roger Moore.
All right, maybe not. He gets close to her. I don't know. I really, like, struck me this time.
She's not cold yet. Jesus, Roger Moore. Seriously? Fucking corpses. I'll call you Dr. Cold Flash. Wow.
I can't keep up today.
By the way, Dr. Warm Flash. Character in this movie. Who agrees to put Bond back in the field because he fucks her.
Yeah.
And on the IMDb trivia, it was like, Serena Scott Thomas chose not to use a body double and used her own body in that scene. Like, okay, why is this trivia? All right. Yay, good for her. It's obviously, whatever. What are there good set pieces in the back half that I'm overlooking? again, I don't know what it is about the first half that I like. There's some setup stuff that I like. I like the seeing scheme with him and Elektra. I think that stuff's kind of interesting.
We have the... There's like the tunnel set piece.
Okay. I don't remember any like very good set pieces in the back half. And like I said, it almost gets so big that I just lose sight of anything that I care about.
Sure.
You know, having that rescue M is not especially interesting, right. Although doesn't Skyfall do the same thing?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, so I'm a hypocrite because I really like Skyfall, but in this
it's
movie.
All the execution.
And again, just focusing on like Judi Dench and what they do with Judi Dench is such an interesting comparison in terms of like 90s Bond and contemporary Bond, and why I prefer the approach that they're taking for the most part in some of the newer Bonds, I think, as opposed to what they do in the 90s. I think just she gets swallowed up, you know?
She does. But she's... How many Bond movies... So she was in all... She started in GoldenEye, right?
Yeah, and then carried all the way through Skyfall. Yeah,
that is cool.
She's
terrific. But yeah, I mean, they locked her in a room, so it was a waste of a...
Right. With a dog keeping guard. Not really. There's no dog. What do you think about the return of Hagrid?
Oh, I liked him.
Okay.
I always like Robbie Coltrane.
I mean, I do too. His death is a little bit bitchy.
Oh, sure.
It kind of sucks. I mean, I like that his last move is to try to save Bond, I guess.
Right.
But
I thought maybe the easier move would be to...
shoot her?
Yeah, to shoot her. But
yeah, I guess Bond remains stuck in that situation. So... I think his thinking is, and I guess I like this, that he's like, okay, if I can free Bond, I know that he's going to bring all this shit down. Like, that he has enough confidence in Bond. Right. He's like, all I have to do is shoot that one cuff, and I have just signed your fucking death warrant, Elektra. It's...
I agree, but I like him. So...
Yeah, I do too. I don't know where is this for you with the Brosnan Bonds?
I think it's like you. I think it's my second favorite. I would need to see Tomorrow Never Dies again.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I saw Tomorrow Never Dies, and I remember liking it more than I did the last time I watched it, which is so often the case.
Yeah, that, absolutely.
Like, we watch these and it's like, oh, it's not good. I remember this being better. Like 6 months from now, I'll be like, World's Not Enough. Pretty good, right? I remember it being really good. But yeah, I don't. What else? What else do we want to say about The World's Not Enough? Are we seriously out of stuff to say? That's pretty weak, man. I just don't think there's enough that's memorable. Like, I like Robert Carlyle. I don't think he's a super memorable villain. I think, unfortunately, Denise Richards is memorable for the wrong reason. I think, you know, she's been called out as being the worst Bond girl, and so that's why she stands out.
How about Sophie?
I think she's okay. Like,
I like her a lot.
Okay.
Actually. She's interesting motivations, at least. Like, there's...
Yeah.
I think she's very good. I am always compelled when she's on the screen.
Okay.
I like her quite a bit.
Yeah, I guess I'm always a little bit wanting them to go, I guess, further with the stuff with her and Robert Carlyle in terms of exploring the psychology of that, because it twists like two times, right? Like, first, we think it's a weird Stockholm Syndrome situation.
Yes.
And then they flip it a second time and basically say, like, no, she's the one who's actually who kind of turned him.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
It is, but it's handled in the span of one dialogue exchange, and we don't actually see much of it play out on screen.
I agree.
There is that scene between the two of them, which is either post or pre-sex, that I think is kind of neat. And again, I like the idea that he can't feel anything, but I also don't think it ever really pays off any way.
Right.
So it's this gimmick that they don't know what to do with.
Right.
You know? And he's yet another Bond villain in recent memory that, like, his whole thing is, like, he's kind of disfigured, right? Because we have the guy from Die Another Day, Diamond Face. Yeah. We have Mads Mikkelsen, who's just crying blood all the time. we have Robert Carlyle, who's, like, kind of disfigured. I'm forgetting one, I think. I don't remember. I don't remember. Javier, but I guess that's kind of a reveal, like fucking nightmare reveal.
It really is.
Oh, goodness me.
And then it's our last Desmond Llewellyn.
Yes, which, by the way, my memory is like, okay, he's clearly training his replacement. The writing's on the wall. They know, okay, he's getting a little too old, and they're going to put John Cleese in there. Yep. And, okay, fine. And then I know that he passed away, and I was like, surely he passed away of old age, because no.
Nope, I read that too and was very upset by it.
He died in a car accident.
Yeah, what the hell?
Right?
And he apparently said he intended on coming back, which I thought was...
Do you think he had read the script for Die Another Day? And just blew a red light. It's a horrible, I don't mean to say anything bad about the memory of Desmond Llewellyn. I'm not suggesting he intentionally ended his life, but that movie really, I mean, he dodged a bullet. Let's face it.
I think honestly he was driving and Lazenby was sitting next to him and fucking spilled 7-Up all over the place and he got distracted.
By the way, you never want to be in a car with Lazenby. That never works out well for anyone. Jesus, poor Tracy, RIP. Yeah, no, that's the worst. Lazenby cannot. He only uses sippy cups. If you watch Her Majesty's Secret Service, when he orders the martini shaken, not stirred, they literally hand him a sippy cup, and he still fucking manages to dribble it down his Bigfoot chin. I can't believe we didn't think of more Christmas jokes for Roger Moore. I'm so
off
upset.
My game.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm trying to run Game of Thrones Roger Moore jokes in my head.
I cannot believe, like, the joke about Christmas comes once a year. Like, it is eye-rollingly horrible.
Horrible. And that's the note you end on.
That's literally the... And it just fades to black. It's just that you just fucking shrug. Like, I know, we're sorry.
It is a shrug.
We'll see ourselves out. Fade to black. There's also, like, a moment that could be cool that apparently was a suggestion by Pierce Brosnan when he dips under the water during that opening chase and he kind of straightens his tie. I would argue that it is torpedoed, if you'll pardon the pun, by the way that Michael Apted cuts it together, because he dissolves into the underwater and then he dissolves out of it, and it's real fucking weird.
That's okay. That's really interesting, because I thought, and I'm not saying that's wrong, but I thought it didn't work for me, partially because of him shooting that in the wide, as wide as it was. I thought that I, like, because the tie thing does not work for me, and my thought was, had he shot it closer, I mean, maybe this is probably just in my own head. This makes sense
for totally different reasons.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
Why doesn't it work? Ultimately, it doesn't work because he should have fucking done it when he came out of the water.
Well, okay, sure.
Like, why is he doing it under the water? Unless they cut to, like, a mermaid swimming nearby, and he's like, "Ay, ta-tai, ta-tai. I've never fucked a fish, I say."
I don't know what it is.
Bond, James Bond. Is that our Brosnan? I'm not happy with that being the Brosnan.
I don't
character.
Do good Irish.
Luckily, we only have two more. I don't either. That's not stopping me. Luckily, we only have two more Brosnans.
It is not Daniel Craig fixing his cufflinks.
No, well, that's the thing. Sure. It's like, this is sort of the precursor to that.
Right.
But that's the coolest thing ever.
It is.
And this is like, oh, that's almost neat. Why doesn't it work? Well, a couple of reasons. Apparently, they shoot it too wide. They dissolve in and out of it. and why is he straightening his tie underwater? Coming out of the water, it makes more sense.
Yep. And by the way, the wide thing just makes sense in my head. I'm not saying it's going to make sense to anyone
dissolves.
Else. But like,
same with the dissolves, by the way. Like, to me, this is not a... I just don't think you can get away with dissolving in this franchise, really.
Right.
Especially not for that short of a time. You want to dissolve from, like, one love scene into the next morning. Okay, fine. But, like, when you're literally doing it for a four-second shot, it... You know, again, dissolving has become the language of, like, dreams, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it just – it does. You need hard cuts.
Mm-hmm.
This makes sense to me.
Yeah, no.
Okay. I'm glad that you're nodding at least and just fucking humoring me.
No,
I don't know
what it makes sense.
I don't know what I'm saying right now. And it's – no, I guess that's it, right?
Yeah.
We got nothing else?
I like it.
Okay.
Just fine. Going into it, I was expecting...
Better or worse than you remember? About the same.
Maybe about the same, but I had gone into it pretty convinced I was going to dislike it.
Oh, okay. See, I went in convinced I liked it way more. And again, I liked that first hour a lot. And so to see it, for me, fall off in the second hour was disappointing because I was ready for like, oh, my thesis for this podcast is this is the best Brosnan Bond. And I don't think I can convincingly make that argument.
I just feel like lately when I come on this podcast, I dislike everything we talk about. So
okay,
I was
Leprechaun
convinced.
Returns and Aquaman. I don't really think you could beat yourself up for either of those things. I think everyone understands. Did you know that Leprechaun Returns, though, that Leprechaun played by Pierce Brosnan? I don't know if you knew that.
I did not
know
that.
Same guy.
Wow.
Same guy that played Bond in this movie.
Oh, good. I'm glad to see you landed on his feet.
Yeah. To me, it's hard to tell because he's got a lot of makeup on, but to me, the giveaway was when you see that the leprechaun has just a very hairy chest. And I was like, well, he is a dreamboat.
Just his bow tie.
What is the defining characteristic of the Brosnan Bond?
That's is a good there question.
One?
I don't know.
I mean, if you guys know, let us know in the comments. To me, he's just kind of a mix of other Bonds. And I've always been fine with him. Like, I never had a problem with him. But I do feel like the older I get and the more I watch these movies, the less interested I am in him.
Agreed. And not to always bring her up on the podcast, but for a while, he was my mother's favorite Bond. So maybe we should have asked her to be on.
One of
she
these days.
Explain, yeah.
When we do Zero Dark Thirty.
Yes.
She can please. Come on. Absolutely.
Please. But she, until Daniel Craig, I think Daniel Craig is stolen her heart. But
okay.
He was always her favorite.
Yeah.
I should ask
I don't know
why.
That he was ever my favorite. I mean, he was the first Bond I ever saw theatrically.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is that distinguishes him as a Bond. I feel like almost everybody else you could point to and say it's this. And what's different about Dalton versus Daniel Craig? You can't call both of them the physical Bond. So how are we distinguishing them?
To me, Dalton is more not just gentlemanly, but he's smooth in a way that
Timothy Dalton insists on calling her Holiday Jones. That's how fucking nice this guy is. He's like, I don't want to offend anyone who might not celebrate this holiday, so I'm just going to call you Holiday Jones. I hope that's okay.
Oh, stop the podcast.
Sorry.
No, that was brilliant. I don't even know what I was saying.
What's different about it? He's a gentleman.
Yeah.
And Daniel Craig is not. He's a brute.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, to me, Daniel Craig is just, I always, and I'm sure I brought this up on the podcast a million times, especially when we talked about Casino Royale, but the parkour scene in the beginning of Casino Royale, when the dude he's chasing, like, flips over a wall and Daniel Craig runs fucking through it, yeah. Like, to me, that
Kool-Aid
separates
man
him.
Style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That separates him from the other Bonds. He's like a,
okay.
He's like a bull in a china shop.
So what is Dalton? Besides being not that, what is he? Do you know what I mean? So we're saying he's not just that. So what is he?
Dalton?
Yeah.
I think he's darker.
Okay.
Serious.
Okay. I should figure this out. I don't know. And I've just come to terms with the fact that Living Daylights is my number one. Surpassing From Russia With Love. It's my number one.
Wow, wow, wow.
If you put all the Bonds in front of me and said, which one do you want to watch right now? I'm almost always going to say Living
Daylights. Wow, all right.
Yeah, deal with it. I know you fucking hate it.
No, I don't.
It's fine.
I don't love the
A-ha song, and yet somehow A-ha lives on more than Garbage does. And I think it's just because of Take On Me. Like, they had a bigger hit, right?
Right.
That people would know. Because, yeah, Garbage, like, people don't necessarily know, which is a bummer. It's a good Bond theme.
Mm-hmm.
Not as good as Die Another Day. Like, we got that coming still.
Die Another Day.
It's so good. I like the use of, I think, castanets, I think. I don't know what is happening in that song. But boy, I don't like it. It's so appropriate that the worst Bond movie also has the worst Bond theme.
Mm-hmm.
Which one are we doing next? Who have we not? We just did a Connery.
We've only done the one Dalton, right?
Yeah, I mean, we could do License to Kill.
We could.
I guess. I'm going to be heartbroken if you like it more than Living Daylights. License to Kill is a little bit, is like The World Is Not Enough of the 80s, because it's like some of the problems with World Is Not Enough have to do with, again, 90s action, in the way that I think License to Kill is hurt by being kind of an 80s
okay
action movie. Mm-hmm. More than a Bond movie.
Okay.
Whereas Living Daylights is real classical. License to Kill tries to be a Lethal Weapon, you know, basically. And so that's going to be the next one,
because we've done most, have we done all of the Daniel Craig's? You and I might not have done it, but has a website done all the Daniel Craig's?
No, because we haven't done Quantum of Solace.
Oh, okay.
You and I did Casino Royale, and we did Spectre. JB and I did Skyfall once upon a time. We have not done Quantum of Solace.
Okay, that would be an interesting one too.
Listen, it's your call. Either way, we're gonna finish one of the Bonds. We finished Lazenby. He's done.
But I mean, he's never done that.
Either way, that's going to be a wrap on one of the two Bonds. So it'll be one of those two.
Okay. We do have probably a lot of more and Connery to go.
Oh, yeah. Well, especially Sean Connery. We've literally done one Sean Connery, and he did a lot of these movies. So
do we just do... Well, you and JB did Goldfinger.
No. Never podcasted on Goldfinger. He's
really?
Written about Goldfinger. We've never podcasted on Goldfinger. Yeah. The only Bond that we ever did.
Just Dr. No?
Just Dr. No. That's the only Connery that we've done.
Maybe we should do a Connery.
Which one? Oh, no, wait. We did, no, that's Roger Moore. I was going to say we did Moonraker. That's Roger Moore.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know which one, but maybe.
All right. Well, we don't know either, guys. So I guess in the comments, if you feel real strongly about which Bond we should do next, whether it's a Roger Moore or Quantum of Solace or License to Kill, let us know.
Yeah.
And we will try to just go by popular vote.
I like that.
It's always fun to talk about these movies with you.
It is.
I always enjoy it.
Sorry I didn't have more to say, but I liked it.
Yeah, me too.
How about that?
I like it enough.
Yeah.
It's probably kind of middle to upper middle for me in terms of all of them.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. One of these days, we'll write out the definitive ranking for each of us, but that has to be all the way at the end, and that's going to be, forget it.
We'll when we get
Roger Moore's age by the time that happens.
If we actually got to the end.
Yeah.
Would you do a massive rewatch leading up to it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if we were going to rank them all, I would have to. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. Make sure you go to fthismovie.com, check out the details on F This Movie Fest taking place March 9th, 10 a.m. Central. Visit us every day at fthismovie.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie. We're on Facebook and Instagram, and you can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. If you have comments or feedback or show suggestions, or you're offended by my Irish Pierce Brosnan voice, listen, I get it. It's offensive because it's terrible. It's a terrible, terrible voice. Anyway, thank you, Mike.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.